Michael, I'm sure there's plenty of names that you know there. You're pleased for some of the younger players to be making that step up and getting a run out in, I know it's only pre-season, but in the first team again.
Yeah, pre-season's the most important time for the young players to make an eye in front of the manager when maybe one or two of the older players are coming back a little bit later. I'm really pleased to see Ryan Kent back at Liverpool and a chance to show how he's matured from his loan in Barnsley. And there's a young boy there, Dominic Solanke, that I think is going to excite a lot of people, a boy that I've known since the age of 6 years old. And I'm really excited to see how he does. And we would say to the young players at the end of the season that make sure you come back strong and try and gain one or two yards on the older players, because it's a clean slate for everybody.
You mentioned Dominic Solanke and known him since he was 6 years old. I mean, at 6 years old, can you spot a player? Can you, even at that young age, can you say he's going to be some player?
Well, he was training with our under-8s, with Ovie Ajari. So that was like, they were two players in London that everybody knew about. Dominic has had unbelievable movement mechanics at a young age. He was so fast, and he was just somebody that he got out of his dad's or mum's car and just, you know, sprinted to the pitch. And he stayed like that for like 90 minutes of your session. So he's a boy that has a lot of enthusiasm. I have to say that he's matured into a very nice young man as well. He's a little bit shy, so people will be patient with him. But he's an outstanding goal scorer, and obviously just come off the back of the Under-20s World Cup where he was player of the tournament. So he has a big CV also.
You personally, you just come back from Brazil, haven't you? You spent just over 6 months at Sao Paulo as the assistant manager there. It was a short period of time, probably shorter than perhaps you would have imagined. How much did you learn? What did you gain from going over there?
Oh, I gained a huge amount. I think to the size of Sao Paulo is similar to the size of Liverpool, and they've won the World Club Championship 3 times. They've produced some fantastic players down the years and have like a 70-seater stadium, a 1,000-seater stadium. And so there were huge games playing in front of 52,000, 48,000 fans in the big derbies. I decided to come away from the club basically because the project changed. And financially in Brazil, you have to maybe sell one or two of your best players, but we actually sold probably 8 of our starting lineup in 2.5 months to some of the big clubs in Europe, and I just felt the project had changed. So it was the right time to come home. It was a huge benefit to me in terms of learning about Brazilian football and Brazilian players, and I can take training sessions in Portuguese now, which is it's quite an impressive thing for me personally in terms of a personal aim.
When you've come from Liverpool where you've been working, to go over there though, how easy is it to settle? Because I think your family went over in February, didn't they? But you have visa problems and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, there was a slight mistake where I went to pick up my visa and the family were attached to it, but there was a problem. The family didn't travel with me, where there was a misunderstanding with the club. And so my family had to come home after 90 days. That was really tough, because 7 weeks without a 3- and a 5-year-old was tough. But they actually come back, and my children loved it. We were lucky enough to have a swimming pool in the house and a park opposite. The lifestyle, the food, the weather was fantastic, and they were actually sad to come home. It was purely a football decision, really, to come home. And as you can imagine, it was like the most beautiful football holiday. One day you're playing Santos, then you're travelling to Rio to play against Fluminense or Flamengo, have the big derbies against Palmeiras and Corinthians. I was lucky in my first game we played River Plate, the big Argentinian team. And for an English coach, being the first English coach to go there for this, and also just for an English coach to experience it, I feel that I've come on, you know, leaps and bounds because of this experience.
If you were asked to do a similar job again, would you jump at the chance again?
Yeah, of course. It was just the project that changed. I think I've been very lucky in Chelsea, but more so in Liverpool, that I really believed in the direction we were going. And that's what gets you out of bed in the morning. I think it's more the people that you work with and the project, you know. And I always say that you have to be able to go on a journey with the players or a journey with the club. And I just felt that the journey was coming to an end because there was too many changes. So I didn't fall out of anyone. It was just a nice time to stop. And I have some offers to go back in January to be a manager, or even across to Japan, that I'm probably weighing up. I'd like to be a little bit closer to home for the next job, but it's something that come January, it might be the best option for me.
You're so used, though, aren't you, to working with younger players. Is it difficult, you know, when you went over there, you're working with more perhaps experienced players in some respects?
Yeah, one of my jobs was to integrate the young players from their academy, which is called Cotia, which has produced players such as Kaká and David Luiz, Oscar, Lucas Moura at Paris Saint-Germain. So it's a world-famous academy, one of the best in the world. And we managed to give seven players debuts in the 34 games I was there. So that was a big part of my job, to integrate them players. But we also had a Brazilian international, two Argentinian internationals, a number 10 that played for the Peruvian national team. So it wasn't an opportunity to work with senior internationals, which, of course, I had done at Liverpool at times, managing different players when they came to the 23s or going across to Melwood to take the odd session. But it was really interesting to see how they live and breathe football differently to us. Obviously, the cultural differences, and just the cultural differences between a player from Brazil and Argentina, is much bigger than what people would imagine.
And now you've worked with older players, and I know you said about the integration there, but you've worked with the first team. Has it given you the taste that you want to now work with the first team somewhere, or wouldn't you mind going back and working with younger players again?
I've been lucky. In like 16 years in youth development, I've done every age group but under 18s. And I used to have a laugh and joke with Neil Critchley that his job was much more stable than mine at Liverpool, the under 23s, with players moving around. So I'm not ruling anything out. I think I'm a youth developer, but I have to say that I think a 27-year-old wants to develop as much as a 17-year-old. So it's much more about people and project. It's an aim one day to be a manager, but it's also an aim one day to be a head of youth. So it's more just waiting to see what opportunities might come in the coming weeks and months, and picking the one that I believe in the most.
There's someone quite high profile now working with the under-18s, isn't there? So,
yeah, I was lucky enough to go in on Saturday and see Stephen coaching. He looks very comfortable. I think he's made a fantastic decision in terms of his career, like transition to coaching. He's gone into it with his eyes and ears open, and he don't need any advice off me. From what I saw on Saturday, he looks to be loving it, and obviously the players are loving having him there. It's all quite exciting, I think. And I have to mention Scott Parker as well, who's just gone in at Spurs with the under-18. Scott's a boy that played in the same Sunday League grassroots team with me and at Cholton. So I'm seeing two people that I've seen have fantastic careers going to youth development, and I think it's a lovely move from an ex-professional to make.
Michael, I wanted to ask you about your book, 60 Training Games for Elite Player Development. So is this, if you like, a guide to how you can get to the sort of top in 60 games? Is that how it kind of works?
Well, see, I've written 10 books, so I've obviously got a lot of spare time on my hands. Now, when my wife and children went home from Brazil, it was just a chance to put together some practices that I'd designed and put it out there. And for grassroots coaches through to professional coaches, I'm a firm believer that we need to keep players active in the session, inspired, and the best way to do that is to stick close to the game rather than coming away and making isolated drills or anything too tactical or technical. I think with kids now are not playing in the streets like before, so the best thing when they come to you is to make them active, because that might be the only active time they have in a week if you're taking a grassroots team. And likewise, I think for academy coaches or professional coaches, you need ideas, and the thing that inspires players the most is actually playing the game, isn't it? So it's just a collection of my favourite games in this moment in the last, you know, 1 or 2 years of coaching, and the feedback's been fantastic.
When you say that kids aren't playing in the street anymore, has that altered in a way the development of kids then? Because when you know, I was a kid a long time ago in the 1980s, we did used to go to the park and play. Yeah. It doesn't really happen anymore, does it?
No, it doesn't really happen. I think there's a safeguarding thing around it. I think we've become very much that way. And what I saw in Brazil was a different type of kid. Obviously, you have the favelas there and you have the street kids, and maybe the parents can't afford computers. I think the technology boost, if you like, has took kids off the street as well. And so, no, I think if you're a grassroots coach now and you've got kids coming to you for maybe 2 hours or 1 hour a week, it's important that you allow them to play and move around rather than listening to your voice and stopping and instructing. I think it's a very simple game, and I think, you know, attack one goal, defend one, but maybe how you emphasise different rules or emphasise different things you'd like to see can have a real impact on kids.
When you said you work with under sixes as well, my little boy's six at the moment, plays a lot of football, but whenever I go and watch them, it kind of takes me back to when I was a kid, because they just all run after the ball. How do you stop them doing that? Because naturally they want the ball, don't they?
Give them a ball each is one way to stop them. I think back then I was a professional shoelace tire upper. You know, I wasn't actually a professional football coach. I was just tying up shoes for a living. So
yeah.
That was it. I was trying to teach kids how to do their trainers up. But no, there's things that you can do. I think that, you know, when you send your kid anywhere, whether it's be a school or any class, you want it to be individualised. You want it to be about your child. So I think, and that's the same with professionals, believe it or not. You know, you really have to, it's more about people skills than it actually is about football at the level that I'm working at now. It's about understanding people, what motivates them. But I even think now I've got a 3 and 5 year old, and whenever they go and do anything, you're fascinated as a parent about how they behave, what they like. And parents ask for feedback a lot, and I think that coaches are worried about feedback. I just think it's parents being interested in their children. And back then, it was just about keeping them happy and playing maybe little 1v1, 2v2 games, but inspiring the love for the game. That's why I think personality is a huge thing when you're coaching in any walk of life.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to make it fun as well, isn't it? Because it's a fine line between parents caring and standing there and saying, you know, move into, and getting a little bit too involved, really, I suppose.
Yeah, you see that, don't you? You see, and I think the FA has done very well with campaigns about, you know, the parents' conduct on the side. And I think some clubs have done some very, very good things. And certainly in academy football now, parents are very quiet on the sideline. It's almost like being at the Crucible and watching snooker. Something happens, there's a little ripple of clapping. But no, I think that's it. I think you can educate the parents as well. I think that as a coach now, your communication skills are huge, both with the players that you coach and of advising the parents on the steps that their children are taking. And there's a huge thing about growth and maturity that parents need help with, because if it's your first child, you're experiencing everything for the first time, and you can get a bit excited. And why shouldn't you get excited as well? It's your child. It's your love and joy, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And you mentioned that you've written quite a few of these books. Is this something that's ongoing then? You plan to write quite a few more, maybe?
Yeah, I think that it's important to help and mentor coaches that are coming through and maybe give them some ideas. I don't think you can ever have enough ideas. It's sort of a game that keeps expanding and developing. And it's something that I started probably 10 or 12 years ago. And I try to maybe every 12 months release another one that just helps coaches along, really. And I've had feedback from all over the world. It's crazy where your books can get to sometimes, and especially this one, because it's a download via the internet, so it's much more accessible. You don't have to go into a shop and buy it. And no, it's just when I was coming up as a young coach, I'm still considered a young coach now, but when I was in my early 20s, I had a thirst for ideas, and to have someone that was in a good position in their coaching handing something down was important.
And how do people get their hands on it then?
Well, I have a blog now that it's called michaelbeallblog.wordpress.com. People can go on there and download it. It's via a publisher called payhip.com. It's a very simple way of publishing now, and anyone can really publish. So I would say to any young coaches, they got ideas, to put something together, because I think that's it. I think there's no right or wrong answers in football. I think it's just a sharing and collating of ideas.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about your time as a player then, and growing up and all that kind of thing. Was football kind of like all you thought about from a very early age, would you say?
Yeah, it was. I was very lucky. I was born into a family that had interest in football. We had a relative called Raymond Harford, who was famously the Blackburn assistant manager to Kenny Dalglish.
Oh, I remember Ray Harford, of course.
It was a fantastic coach. And then
what relation was he to you, sorry?
He's my nan's cousin. But they lived in the same house growing up, you know, as people did generations ago.
Yeah.
So he was very close. And so I always had him in the family, as you believed you could make it as a football player. My mum's best friend's husband was a guy called Billy Gilbert, who played for Crystal Palace in the team of the 80s, that young team they had coming through with Terry Venables as manager. So I used to go and watch games a lot as a real young kid, like 2, 3 and 4. I was going to Selhurst Park and watching games. So I had never had this belief you couldn't be a football player. And I probably started at 5 or 6 and in a local team. And then at the age of 10, I went across to Charlton, which was doing fantastic things for youth development at the time, was bringing through players. I played in the same age group, or the same team there, as Scott Parker and Paul Konchesky, and a year below was Jermaine Defoe, who's gone on to have a good career. So it was a fantastic development for me there. And the coach who headed the academy up at the time was a guy called Neil Banfield, who's part of Arsene Wenger's staff at Arsenal. He's probably been at Arsenal 20 years now. So I was lucky, really. I had good influences around me and obviously good players around me. So the love for the game come from there.
Were you a Palace fan as a kid then?
No, I'm controversially, I'm a Chelsea fan, which right, I have okay. to whisper in this part of the world, because okay. obviously with my connection now to Liverpool, Liverpool's in my heart, obviously now yeah. stronger maybe than Chelsea, but my my dad's side of the family were big Chelsea people.
Were you Kerry Dixon's your hero, I'm guessing? I don't know who would...
No, it was probably Pat Nevin, to be honest.
Pat Nevin.
Because I was like a winger or a fouled winger, whatever you want to call it. So Pat Nevin was my hero back then.
He's carved out another career for himself, hasn't he? He's a great media sort of analyst of the game now. He's very interesting to listen to as well.
Yeah, he was a real character as a player because he obviously had that punk rocker style, didn't he, with the hair. But yeah. he was a very, very gifted player. And, you know, I remember, like, I think, I suppose, when I was first coaching at Chelsea, Iron Robin come. And I just love this thing about wingers. I was a winger myself. If you can imagine this, I was like a very bad Chris Waddle, quite lazy. And
didn't have the mullet, did you?
No, I didn't have the mullet, but I had a terrible haircut when I was younger. No, I used to wait for the ball and on the wing, and I was a naturally left-footed, quite gifted technically. But that's the thing. Maybe I got to Charlton's reserves when we were in the Premier League. I had a squad number, but I couldn't break through. And there was parts of my game that maybe I needed to work on, and so coaching's become a big passion to help other kids through to their dream, where I think I've just felt a little bit stopped a little bit short of mine. But coaching, I'm a much better coach than I was a player. I have a huge passion for coaching, and it's basically to help people realise what their dreams are, really.
So when you were at Charlton then, would that have been Alan Kirbishley era?
Yeah.
I mean, what was he like? Because he did so well there, didn't he?
It was a fantastic club. You can imagine when I was a kid there, they didn't have a stadium. They were sharing at Selhurst Park, and the club nearly went extinct, and it's a real family club, and they've always been good for young players. Even now in recent times where they've had some troubles, it's been the young players coming through that have done well. And you see Joe Gomez at Liverpool and Lookman now at Everton. They've had this, you know, fantastic stream of players down the years. And Kirbishley was fantastic for the club. That's the best moment in the club's history of recent years. And he was a really, really good man, Alan, I have to say. And apart from his judgment on me, apart from that, I thought he was a very good man.
Do you think we'll ever see them back in the Premier League? I mean, there's lots of issues at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, I think the stadium and the setup of the club is very much Premier League. There's only, you know, you're only talking about a number of years ago, they were sort of fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth in the Premier League. And it's a shame the way things have gone. And obviously we have a lot of foreign owners coming into the game in England. And we just got to be careful, really, that we don't lose identity. That's a club that is identified with an area in South London that people are very proud of their team. And maybe they feel their team's been taken away from a little bit in recent years. But it wasn't so long ago that the Liverpool fans felt similar situation. So we have to be careful.
And you also had spells, I think, at FC20 and QPR as well after Charlton. What was it? How difficult was that?
I was a huge influence about Dutch football. I'm a big Johan Cruyff fan, and my dad drilled that into me as a kid, and he's sort of the person that I follow as the beacon of sort of coaching Johan Cruyff. So I have a chance to go and play in Holland was fantastic. At the time, FC20 were a team that was sort of third or fourth. Andy van der Meijden was there, the ex-Everton player, was on loan from Ajax at the time. So it was an exciting club, and I spent probably 7 or 8 weeks there, and ultimately it didn't work out. They didn't have the finances we have in the Premier League. I don't think the young kids realise how lucky they are here, that at 18, 19, 20, they can earn a real wage to play football. One of the things at FC 20 was that you would train in the evening, and then they would find you a job train in the daytime, they would find you a job in the evening, and to a cocky South Londoner, that didn't sound much of a good job. So I come back, spent a bit of time at QPR, a little bit of time at Rushden Diamonds, and I sort of fell out of love with the game and fell into coaching, which was, it saved me really, because that's one thing now I'm worried about with young players who spend probably 8 or 10 years in the academy. If it doesn't work out, it's important that you have other interests outside, that you develop yourself as a person, because professional football can last 8, 10, 12 years if you're a top player and very fortunate. But we see a lot of kids coming out of the game that one minute had the hopes of the world at their feet and the next minute really don't know what to do with themselves. And so I'm quite keen. One of my interests now, why I'm not working, is to start a company based on helping players with that and giving players a real focus in their life in terms of support and advice, because it's a real grey area in football, I believe.
You mentioned there, actually, about, you know, they try and find you a job in the evening when you're over in Holland. Some would say that's not a bad thing. Some would say, you know, as a kid, you're probably thinking, oh, I don't want to do that. But actually, is there something in that? Because it makes kids a bit more well-rounded, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think we're in a generation of mobile phones where people will text each other rather than speak. I think it's really important that, rather than coaching football, we sort of teach and guide players and get them having a two-way. Because I think we find a lot of 18, 19, 20-year-olds now find it very hard to talk for themselves. And so I think that one of the things maybe there in Holland would have been beneficial to me is that I would have learnt better communication and social skills. I know when we was at Liverpool, we had a brief chat with a local hotel here, one of the big ones in the city centre, about maybe putting our 17-year-olds behind the reception or in jobs in the hotel in the afternoon. We were very keen on job placements like that.
And, right, right.
And it was, you know, it was something that Phil Roscoe and Alex Inglethorpe were sort of driving, and I was involved in the chats, and it was very interesting because you do have 16, 17 year olds that are tactically and technically maybe very, very good football players, good athletes, but as people have still got a lot of development to do. And so it's important that we can help people, young people in general, improve social skills, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. That's really interesting. And in terms of the coaching element, you say that, you know, you fell out of love with being a player, and that's kind of how you ended up getting into the coaching. Your first experience was actually as a futsal coach. How did you get involved with that?
Well, it was interesting. I was reading an ad in the 442 magazine, and the guy called Simon Clifford had started Brazilian soccer schools. It was like quite a big thing at the time. He had been behind the movie Bend It Like Beckham.
And, oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I had a little bit of money left over and struggled some more money together with my dad and bought the franchise for that, and probably only worked it for a year and a half. But basically, it involved balls that didn't bounce. There were football de salão, which is a big sport in Brazil, with like a weighted small ball, and it's played in like a church hall on like a basketball court, wooden floor. And that's how a lot of young Brazilian players first have into football. This allow is football of the hall, is the translation. So basically that was how I got into it. It was I had a lot of young kids come to that, and it was very individual based, which my coaching still is now, which is interesting. I never thought it would take me to Brazil, but it took me to Chelsea because word of mouth of parents, and I was very lucky to get a chance to go and work in Chelsea Development Centre with 6, 7, 8 year olds, and really it just sort of went from there. I had a real buzz, you know, when kids are 6, 7 and 8 and they come, they learn so much so quickly and they're really in love with the game. It's still my most enjoyable days in coaching with the real young ones. I think that, you know, people are in a rush to get up the ages. It's a different type of coaching. It's equally as fulfilling. But when you're working with young kids and they're really, you can really see the love and the enjoyment in the game, I think it's a special time for me, that.
The only problem is if they cry when they lose. I'm still finding that quite difficult to say, look, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You're only six. It's only a game. You'll be okay. And you worked your way through the age groups, didn't you, really, at Chelsea? I think you moved up through the age group. Was that a kind of natural progression for you at the academy?
Yeah, I was quite lucky, really. I oversee the 6 to 8 year old programme. So around London, we had 10 development centres where boys could be scouted to come in their local town. And from that, we'd pick the under nines team. So I had like 64 scouts in the M25 to pick these players. And I was in charge of the coaches to develop that programme. But I also did the under 10s to under nines for a year, under 10s for a few years, moved up to the under 14s, did under 13s for a year. So I've been lucky, really. Like, as boys grew and I was working with them, sort of what they needed next, I was learning as too. So I was on a real journey with the players, and that's why I keep coming back to that. You need to be on a, really see a journey through with players and a club and a project. But you know, it was a lovely experience. It was at a time as a Chelsea fan where Ranieri was just leaving, which is really ironic now considering what this success he had last year, and Mourinho come in with the big buzz. I was managed to watch him coach people like Scolari, Avram Grant, Fias Boas, Ancelotti, Hiddink. Ancelotti's my personal favourite. He still is now.
Why is that?
Just his one-to-one skills, really. Just his personal skills as a man, both with players and staff. He had a real keen interest in the young players as well. He used to come and watch all the reserve games and youth team games, which was different to the other managers. And the other thing is that he's travelled around the world, he's learnt different languages, and he's always left clubs in a good place. And he's managed pretty much who has been the best players in the world for the last 20 years. He's managed all of them, and they all speak very well of him. And I'm a big thing about relationships and one-to-one relationships. And so he is almost a beacon for me in management, as Johan Cruyff is in terms of philosophy for coaching.
Ranieri, I mean, I'm not sure what he was like to work with and his coaching style, but obviously Leicester won the league under him. What did you think when that happened, knowing him as you do?
Yeah, well, I think when Ranieri was at Chelsea, he had a fantastic time. It was when Abramovich first came in and started buying all the players, and people forget that he finished second in the league and lost in the semi-final of the Champions League, which for Chelsea at the time was a fantastic season. And I remember the fans being very, very upset when he left, because he was such a nice man, and sort of the media as well had sort of gripped on him, just how they did last year. It was almost like history repeating itself last year in terms of the love from the media and the fans towards him. But obviously he left and Mourinho come in, and I suppose Mourinho's story speaks for itself, what happened afterwards. You know, he promised to win the league in his first press conference and he did it. So then Ranieri was soon forgotten. But I think it was lovely to see him succeed last year, and it's clear that he is a very, very nice man.
When you look at Chelsea, I mean, they get probably more criticism than most for sending players out on loan. You know, and the amount of players that are on their books that are sent on loan, and they get accused of, well, they're just almost stockpiling young players so no other club can get hold of them. What's your feeling on that as a coach? Do you have a problem with them all going out on loan or not?
Well, firstly, like, as a Chelsea fan, years and years ago, they did have a history of producing young players. They had a guy called Gwyn Williams who brought through a number of players in the 80s and early 90s. And the club's completely changed, and no longer does it have a known for bringing players through. They're known for having a fantastic academy with good facilities and wealth and very good players. But the players are sort of getting lost in the system. And when I was there, it was a fantastic place to work. But I stopped believing in the message that we were giving players. If I was sitting with a player or parent, I couldn't actually believe in what I was saying to them about breaking through. I think Chelsea have some fantastic players similar to Man City, but it's important that we don't lose them to English football. And it's important that a boy doesn't lose sort of sight of where he's going, bouncing around different loans. I think there's a case of having a development loan to learn to play with men, to jump from that stage of under 23s, but you still have to see light at the end of the tunnel in terms of breaking through. And soon as I come to Liverpool, it was a completely different club in terms of the people demanded young players to come through. There was a real belief and a need and a want from the local area and fans to produce another Fowler, Carragher, McManaman, Owen, Gerrard. You know, there was a real belief, and I saw players breaking through that a lot easier at Liverpool. But it was because everybody in the club very much wanted that. And I didn't really understand youth development in its fullness until I come to Liverpool. And that was beautiful to see young players go from a young age and play in the team that they still probably wear the pyjamas for. That was a beautiful moment for everybody that was working at the academy there.
I mean, the irony is that it's said that Roman Abramovich wants the kids to be developed and come through. Do you have much to do with him, by the way?
No, I didn't. I met him on one occasion. He's been very, I think, in his time as manager or owner of Chelsea, been very respectful, hasn't he? Hasn't spoken in the media much. And one of the things perhaps in England is that some clubs change managers a lot. Managers are under pressure because the finances in the Premier League, you know, you can get relegated from the Premier League and earn more money than most of the clubs winning championships around Europe. So that's a big thing to put into it in terms of the pressure. I think if you look at Arsenal and you look at Man United, when they've had the managers for a number of years in Ferguson and Wenger, that's easier to have a legacy and bring through players because you're not under pressure. And I certainly think there's clubs such as West Ham and Southampton that maybe don't have the finances to have such a big squad, and therefore players, young players, there's room in the squads each year for them to get through. And there's clubs like Everton and Liverpool who have a real rich history of bringing players through. And I think in this moment in time, both clubs are in a really exciting place for young players, and they have really exciting managers too. So we're lucky in this part of the world in Merseyside with the clubs we have.
Aside from the people you work with as managers at Chelsea, you also work with Steve Holland, Steve Clark, Paul Clement, and Brendan Rodgers. I mean, that's quite a cast list, isn't it, really, when you think about it?
Yeah, there was fantastic youth developers there. It's been the case of the club have produced some very, very good coaches as well. I remember when Steve Holland first came in from Crewe, and I'm really pleased for him. Paul Clement, believe it or not, before I joined Chelsea, the day before I had an interview for Fulham, and Paul Clement took my interview. So for any youngsters watching, Paul Clement left me a message the next day, but because I was a Chelsea fan, I decided to take the job at Chelsea. I didn't ring Paul Clement back, and then about 3 months later he came to Chelsea, so you can imagine how awkward I felt at that time. So no, it just makes you realise that, you know, even when you're young, you might not have the communication skills, but make sure you're professional in your behaviour, because that's a moment I look back and it still gives me a bit of an awkward feeling. But yeah, Paul was an ex-school teacher that's really been a studier of the game and has worked really hard, and obviously got his break with Ancelotti, and he did wonders to keep Swansea in the Premier League last year, and I'm excited to see how he does this year. And obviously Steve Holland with England, and Brendan, who did a good job here at Liverpool. Very, you know, people forget he was 1 week away from winning the Premier League, and
I'll never forget that
and it's done very well now at Celtic. And there was other people as well, Steve Clarke, who's obviously gone on to have a very good career, and there's other young coaches there that are doing ever so well now. And but that's been the same here at Liverpool. I was lucky enough to work with Mike Marsh, Rodolfo Burrell, lucky enough to work with Steve Cooper, who's now working in England, but Alex Inglethorpe and Pepe and Linders, fantastic youth developers. So I've been fortunate.
Yeah, and Brendan, you came to Liverpool, didn't you? But and Brendan was manager, but you're already coming, is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was away on holiday. My parents live in Mallorca, and I bumped into Frank McParland. We both rented a villa off a guy called Colin Murphy, who's a scouse guy that lives out in Mallorca. And I met Frank McParland by that. And obviously, Kenny was still the manager, and I'm lucky enough to have built a relationship with Kenny now, and he's just incredible. Like, wow, sometimes you can ring Kenny for advice, or he'll come in for a cup of tea and sit with you, and it's just amazing. Because in my house, you can imagine, with Raymond being close to Kenny, Kenny was an idol in my house to me as a young person, and such an important person here for Liverpool and Merseyside. To actually spend some time with him, it was amazing.
And Brendan perhaps has this reputation for, I don't know how to put it, being a bit of a David Brent character. Is that harsh on him? You're laughing.
No, it's not harsh on him. I think Brendan, he took some praise and he took some criticism for his time at Liverpool, and I can understand both sides of it. But he, when we look back at it, he was very close. We're hoping that Jurgen can take us as close and beyond that again, and I believe in that too. I think that when I knew Brendan many years ago, he was a different person. He was a youth developer, and he has a really nice way of talking when you're with him that inspires people. And I think, you know, as soon as we have a British or... You know, he likes to be known as an Irish coach, obviously. As soon as we have a coach from the home shores that does well, and same with players and athletes and actors and actresses and singers, we like to knock our own down. And I hope that he goes on to do well again. He's obviously, he's had success at Celtic, but I think he's got bigger ambitions in the future as well, to come back to the Premier League. But he's someone that really educated himself. I remember probably 10 years ago when I was at Chelsea, he spoke fluent in Spanish then. So this is a guy that has educated himself, you know, a lot in their profession. So I think he should be congratulated for that. But yeah, I think the media, you have to be very careful what you say. Sometimes it can come back to haunt you.
Yeah, could you see him as an England manager? I mean, Gareth Southgate's obviously in that job at the moment, but he has been touted as that before, hasn't he?
Yeah, I would like to see the England management job go to a development coach, really. I think that, you know, we can look too far into managers. To manage a club day in, day out is very different to managing in England national team. And I think if you look at Joachim Löw at the German national team, he was a national team, youth national team coach, assisted Jurgen Klinsmann, then took over the job. And so he's seen these players come through for a long time. I think that Dan Ashworth's having an impact at the FA. You look at the Under-20s World Cup, you know, I don't know what the second half brought today in the Under-19s Euros, but we're in the semi-final of that. We won the Toulon. You know, we was in the final of the Under-21s or semi-final 2 weeks ago, the Under-21 Championship. Something's happening in the FA, but I think what people need to realise is we have really good young players in England. I can vouch for that, having been across Europe and in South America. We just can't get them through because we have the World's League here. So maybe we need to look at some things in the Championship, League One and League Two, where we actually make it so homegrown that we are giving, we're not selling the dreams of our young players for foreign players. I think we really need to invest in our own as a nation, really, in terms of our young players.
Is it right that we have this under-23s league that you were involved in until very recently, or was the old reserve league better? What's the right one?
It sort of changed in the early 2000s when the boom came with the Premier League. That, you know, when the foreign players came, they never played in the reserves. So the old reserve league that people were talking about was when it was predominantly just the English players. Mm. And so that went out of it. I think the under-23 league was a big improvement to the old under-21s league in terms of the fixtures, and the amount of fixtures we had last year was much better. But the average age of the teams were 19. So to go from a pretty much a youth league to jump to the Premier League, where the average age is 27, 28, and you have players running around like Coutinho and Luis Suarez, you know, and these type of players, and Zlatan Ibrahimovic and Eden Hazard. To get a boy from an under-19s league to play in that is difficult. But what I would say is Rashford's not done bad for Man United. Tom Davis did amazing for Everton last year. Trent Alexander looks like he's ready to break into Liverpool's team now. These young boys that are given an opportunity very rarely let anybody down, which should be an eye-opener for owners, I think, because that's the big thing. Not many of our owners are now English and actually have a real core relationship with bringing young players through.
I mean, Trent Alexander-Arnold, to pick up on that point there, he just looks like he's got it. You'll know him very well. Everything's in place for him. I don't want to put too much pressure on, but he's a local lad as well. It all fits in, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's exactly what we need, isn't he? Like, and when I say what we need, I'm not speaking specifically as Liverpool fans. I'm talking about the whole country. We need homegrown players from their local city to come through that are very focused and have good mentors around them. I think he surprised me even because he's so slight, but he's grown. You know, you always knew he would grow, long arms and legs and very bony, but he's growing. I mean, he's growing as a person as well. I think the first team staff deserve a huge credit because what Jurgen did when he first came in was take five or six players and move them to Melwood and let them stay there for a number of weeks to sort of be around the senior players, to learn off them, like an old reserve team situation. They were there every day learning from them, and he shows a real interest in them. And I think that's key.
What's Trent's best position in your opinion? Because this is a big debate, really, amongst Liverpool fans. We've kind of see him now as a right back, but that's not originally where he started, is it?
No, he started as a young winger. Like, that was his thing. And when I first come to Liverpool, he was playing as a central defender. And I remember having a bet with a member of staff at Liverpool at the time to say that he would play in the first team because he was just head and shoulders above everybody else. And that was as a central defender. And then he broke into the under-16s when I was coach, playing as a fullback, but in his own age group of players, a midfielder. Then when I moved up, Pepin come in and continued the base as a midfielder. And then he's obviously gone up to the first team as a right-back. I think at the moment we're just happy that he's playing. But you can see as a right-back that he has the ability to play on the wing or the ability as a midfielder. He has fantastic technical ability. And it's hopefully this is a sign of the modern English player, that they are flexible, but also they're exciting with it. I think we went through a stage of developing players that were a bit blunt. Technically were okay, could play in different positions, but they didn't really excite you. But Trent has this lovely aggression and speed that excites you. And I'm keen that we can keep his feet on the floor and not talk too highly about him, because he's achieved a lot, but achieved nothing compared to what he wants to achieve. So I think when he gets to 100 games, we can start talking about a good player.
Michael, what did you make of the decision by Jurgen Klopp and the club to merge the academy with the first team training centre? It looks like Liverpool are going to be leaving Melwood.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic for the club. I think it's long been overdue. I think that we've been lucky in the time I was there with Brendan and Jurgen had a real interest in youth development, because otherwise the distance between Melwood and Kirby could have seemed huge. But in the last two managers have real took a keen interest. I think that comes from the owners as well. I think they demand it. But I think it'll be fantastic to have everybody together. The under-23s won't seem like the king of the castle. They'll still have one or two, you know, real men above them that can help them along. But in the meantime, we obviously have brought back players like Robbie Fowler, Steve McManaman, Rob Jones, who do a fantastic job in mentoring the young players, Steve Highway, Kenny Dalglish, and that was really to fill that void, you know, of not having the senior professionals around and the manager around. So, no, I think it's long overdue, and I think that it's going to be sad leaving Melwood, but I think it's a necessity now.
And you mentioned there about the mentors, and we've touched on Steven Gerrard already, but your thoughts on him being back at the club and taking the decision to start at the beginning, really, as opposed to maybe taking up a job with MK Dons that he was offered as manager earlier on?
I think it speaks volumes of him as a person. I think, obviously, it was very important that Liverpool offered him something before somebody else did, because he's Liverpool's boy and Liverpool is his life. And I think that it's really important. I think having Steve Highway there is very important as well, because he obviously was a mentor to Stephen coming through. He has friends there that played with him, such as Tom Colshaw, who's his assistant this year, who's been a lifelong friend to him, so I think that's important. I think Alex Inglethorpe and Pepin Linders, these sort of people can really help him and obviously mould his experience from playing. And he was a real leader when he played as well. So, you know, he's been used to talking to people and being a leader of people for a long time. But also, I think it's really important. I think it's something in Holland that you have to do. You have to volunteer and go back into your clubs to get your coaching badges. And that's why Ajax have had this stream of ex-players go through there as youth academy coaches. And it's, I think it's something that Liverpool are keen to do to keep the roots of the local area and the days gone past.
And you say he's a leader. He's not a ranter and raver, though, is he? Or he never appeared to be. So what will his management style be, do you think? Would it be similar to yourself, for example?
No, I think that he has a real way of talking to people. I think he's obviously an important person for the young kids that have probably been a hero, so he's got their ears and their eyes first. And I think, you know, he's not someone that wants to talk a lot. So when he does talk, it's a lovely quality that he has that people listen. I've watched, lucky enough to watch his training recently, but and thought he came across really well and has a wealth of knowledge to pass on to players. But the one thing that I remember when Stephen was coming in to do his badges, that Desmar, who was the under-16s coach, and Pepin, they were working together at the time, and Stephen was going in and helping them. Pepin, who's an outstanding coach, said to me straight away, "Hey Mick, Stephen's going to be a good coach." And that's a good enough recommendation for me from, you know, obviously one of my best friends in Pepin. And same when I've spoke to Alex when I've been in Brazil, he's been delighted with the way Stephen's gone in and done it. And I think it speaks volumes of him as a person. You know, there would have been a job maybe to go in the TV for more money, maybe a job to go in and be a manager and jump straight into it. But he wants to be a student of the game, just how he learnt to be a football player. And we can only applaud him and wish him well.
And of course, Jurgen Klopp is the man who'll be working with him at times as well. What's Jurgen like to work with? I mean, he's infectious, isn't he?
Yeah, he has a very unique personality, how you see on the TV. He's an inspirer of people. I think he's managed to get the players, the academy as well, but more importantly, the fans, all pulling in the same direction. And when you do that, then special things can happen. I think that it's very important that we can win our first trophy quickly, and I hope that can be this year. But, you know, you never hear of players being unhappy at Liverpool. You know, I think in this moment it's a very happy squad. You saw a lot of pictures and on the internet this summer of players at different people's weddings and players socialising together, which I think is really bright. I think Jurgen's brought a real energy into the team. If you look at the players that he's bought since he's been manager, in Firmino, Mane and now Mohamed Salah coming in, Wijnaldum, they've brought a real energy and speed into Liverpool's team, which he's stayed true to this heavy metal football, hasn't he? That he said, when you go to watch Liverpool play at their best, they're enthralling to watch because it's so energetic and so fast-paced, and so it excites the fans.
And it appears that he won't just sign a player just because they're a big name. You know, increasingly we see big money moves. He needs a player who will fit into his idea of how the club is run and his work ethic, I guess.
Yeah, I think work ethic, and I think he wants to go on a journey with players and he wants players that are ambitious. I haven't spoke to him about that one-to-one, but I think that's clear in his signings and the clear in sort of how he's given opportunities to young players. I think he likes having young players around because they do bring that energy and they're willing to sort of run into a brick wall until it falls over. And so I think he's quite an important manager for young players. I think other than Pochettino in the Premier League, them two are leading the way. You know, other than them two, I think that they're the real standard bearers for young players coming through. And so I think that's important. I think he would have been an outstanding youth coach because he's a developer of people, and hopefully that leads to successful times for Liverpool Academy. I think in 2 years at Liverpool under Brendan and Jurgen, I saw 18 boys make debuts. We're still waiting for that one to break right in and be a mainstay of the team, but that's a very good sign for the Liverpool Academy.
Do you think we're far off that?
No, I don't think we're too far off that. I think we're at a stage now where Trent Alexander is chasing Jurgen, chasing Nathaniel Clyne every day.
He's probably chasing Jurgen as well, to be fair, saying, put me in the team.
Yeah, so I think that's keen. I really like the wide players. I'm a sucker for them, but I love Ryan Kent, Harry Wilson, Shea Ojo, Ben Woodburn, now Dominic Solanke, Ovie Ejaari. There's a lot of young players that Liverpool fans know the name of, which is positive.
Great stuff. Michael, it's been fascinating talking to you. I can't believe how quickly the hour's gone. Will you come back and see us again?
Yeah, anytime. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And just a reminder as well of your latest release that people can download. It is called 60 Training Games for Elite Player Development, and they just need to go to your... Are they best looking for you on Twitter?
Yeah, that's fine. Look for me on social media. I'll be happy to get some feedback as well. Good and bad from everybody.